Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast and our co-host, Scott Parkin in Berkeley, California. And I am not joined by Bob Bazanko today. He is off on assignment, but he will be back soon. But I am joined with one return guest and one new guest. We've had multiple shows on the state's war on the Cop City, Stop Cop City movement. We've talked about the assassination of Tortuguita and the state's backlash against the movement that fought a $90 million cop training center in Southeast Atlanta. In 2023, a number of activists were charged with domestic terrorism, included a huge RICO criminal case against 61 activists. And so joining me today is return guest Priscilla Grimm, who is a New Yorkerican mom, comrade, and activist based in Brooklyn. She's written for In These Times, Hammer and Hope, Scalawag, the Atlanta Community Press Collective, and The Independent. And she is included in anthologies on No Cop City, No Cop World, and World War III Now. And then I'm also joined by Hannah Cass, who is one of the Cobb County Three, and she's earned a PhD in geography and environmental studies at University of Wisconsin-Madison. And her scholar activism includes repression and resistance within struggles for land, food, and abolition. So y'all, thanks for joining me today. There's a lot going on around this topic of state repression in the news. So excited to talk about it. And we're going to be talking about this because we also have the backdrop. We've recently done shows on prairie land. There's new federal indictments this week against people who organize a community mobilization against ICE in Minneapolis. There's been some University of Michigan students recently indicted for protests against around the genocide in Gaza. So maybe actually you have some news this week, Hannah. And so maybe you could actually just start a little bit with the news. And then also you're part of the Cobb County 3, and people may not be familiar with that. So tell us a little bit about the Cobb County 3, and then also tell us the news that happened this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on. So the Cobb County 3 is basically, or was, a case of three Stop Cop City activists who were protesting at the headquarters of Brassfield and Gorey, which is what's the main contractor building Cop City. Back in May 2022, this protest happened. Five people were arrested, and three of us were indicted on both the RICO charges that you mentioned earlier, and later, after the RICO was dismissed, we were then indicted on April 24th of this year, 2026. The three of us were charged with arson and two counts of criminal property damage. So this indictment came down April 24th, 2026, and we found out about it the day before at a press conference from the Attorney General of the state of Georgia. Before we, the defendants, were even served with the indictment, all of the news outlets knew about this case. And we, the defendants, learned about it through the press, not because we were actually served with what we were being charged with. And so that's the basics of the case. And now it's over. It's been dismissed. It was dismissed in court yesterday. And this case lasted all of 6 weeks, Houston at least, from April 24th to yesterday, June 17th, all because we took an aggressive political offensive strategy in our legal defense. And so I really want to highlight the courage and bravery that needs to be at the forefront of all anti-repression efforts and all legal defense activists, especially if you feel you're in the position to take such a stance.
And there was a Guardian article, and I think it was reported in the press some, is that the Attorney General of Georgia, Chris Carr, this was like politically motivated. He was running in the Georgia Republican primary for governor, which he lost. And there's some seems like there's some political motivation involved with this prosecution as well.
Absolutely. Like you said, it was right ahead, right a few weeks before the election, the primary election for governor of Georgia, which the attorney general was running in.
He maybe came in third or fourth even, maybe.
Yeah, he was like in the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, second tier, I guess you could say.
Yeah, or zero tier, I don't know. But in addition to that, what was found in court and admitted by the state on the court record was actually that this case needed to be dismissed on the basis of due process violations, because this arrest, our original arrest, happened in 2022, 4 years ago. They indicted the case about 19 days before it would have expired under the statute of limitations of four-year felonies in Georgia. And so they waited deliberately, strategically, to indict three of the RICO 61 after the RICO case had failed. And so they admitted in open court that this was their strategy, that because they failed at getting us on the RICO charges, they decided to, in their words, take one bite of the elephant at a time. And just the big 61-person elephant, as Judge Farmer had originally said, our RICO judge. And the state said, yes. And we decided to just go after each of the individuals after our RICO case failed. And that was exactly what we were arguing in our motion to dismiss for due process violation. You used the delay of 4 years strategically to benefit your case, which was a failure.
And how did the prosecution respond when the judge dismissed the case?
They haven't said anything.
Were they shocked and stunned in court?
I couldn't really tell because it all happened over Zoom court.
I see.
But yeah, we haven't heard any word about whether or not they're planning to appeal. And usually, like with the RICO, they were pretty on it with their response and their vow to appeal the case. But I think they would lose, and I think they know it.
When you were charged in April, did you and your co-defendants have to turn yourself into jail?
No, because we had already been arrested 4 years ago.
And we're talking about the RICO case a little bit, and so maybe we could turn to Priscilla. And Priscilla, could you tell us a little bit more about the RICO? And I know there's been some, I don't think we've talked with anyone since there's been some updates on the RICO case. I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that.
I mean, the headline to it is that all the financial crime accusations of the RICO were dismissed or dropped pretty early. And it was dismissed on the basis of not having a letter for the governor, which they tried to argue is not important, because it was another case that the local district attorney just recused themselves from doing anything with. It's just really an abuse of powers, what's been happening. And Chris Carr's office, the Office of the Attorney General, has been accused in the press of doing that in other cases that have nothing to do with us, but he's just looking at it as his own little kingdom that he can squash the rights of anybody he so chooses who goes into his line of fire. So it's a RICO without any financial crime alleged to it. It was dismissed. It is filled with 61 people. It is the largest politically based RICO case in American history. And I think 40 of us in it have been charged with domestic terrorism, which is still an outstanding charge for a bunch of us. In March, we went to court to, about 14 of us went to court to have our domestic terrorism charges dismissed. Because I'm an alleged domestic terrorist right now that has never been indicted. I am still getting, I was a poll worker for elections here in New York State before all this happened. I'm still a poll worker. They're still trying to get me to work on next week on this special election.
Right.
If I were really a domestic terrorist, should I be working a poll? like twirl pole, like, could this be happening? It's just, and specifically just to be the process is the punishment. And, you know, Hannah and I are very lucky to be backed by a beautiful social movement of people. But there are people all over this country who are being railroaded into jails and prisons based on technicalities and loopholes in the law. And it's going through this whole process has made me laser focused on the fact that if we don't solve the incarceration problem in this country, nothing is going to be solved ever. So, because they can just lock you away, which is what they're trying to make all these activists afraid of, and they need to make sure that they are not afraid, that they act in solidarity and collective defense and never talk to the fucking cops.
You're the RICO case, both these cases are state cases, like I said in the intro, that we see like federal cases, but there hasn't been there like a week or two ago there was like a federal case with your co-defendants.
Unfortunately, two of the Cobb County three, who, reminder, the three of us were also in the RICO. Now these two are being federally indicted for federal arson and intimidation charges. And so they had to turn themselves in. And thankfully, they were able to bond out with, I think, minimal conditions. And they are out of custody now. But yeah, all of the support and solidarity for the two who are facing federal charges. Who have several indictments for the same incident in 2022.
For them, it's like the third time that they've been charged. For the same day of alleged activity. It's ridiculous.
And just to go a little bit, you talked about Brassfield Gorey in the beginning, but can you tell us more? I think what's important here is there's another piece here, which is around the effectiveness of our movements. And so there's where people go and I live here in California, and almost every day there's people out on street corners or on overpasses holding signs about Trump and fighting fascism and stuff, which I'm glad it's people who are my parents' age. So I'm happy to see that. But then we also have very effective campaigns and direct actions going on. And part of what made Cop City effective is that you were targeting some of the sort of corporate pillars of what we're building the facility. I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about Brassfield Gorey and how they're all implicated in this. I hate using human terms to describe corporations, how it's implicated in this.
Yeah, Priscilla, you've actually done some research on this.
Oh, yes. The real outside agitators and the Cop City movement on the other side, it's multinational corporations like Home Depot and Chase Banking and Brassfield Gorey. I just finished working on an article within these times called No New Beds. And one of the focus points of our article is about these companies that go in and they build infrastructure for municipalities and the federal government. Brassfield Gorey is very much one of those organizations. They build infrastructure, and right now infrastructure means data centers and prisons and ICE facilities and border protection stuff, which is crazy. And so they just received $60 million from the Big Beautiful Bill to build facilities at Port Laredo that are probably ICE related. So this is their wheelhouse. This is what they do. They build the structures of repression. Things like Cop City, which is basically to train law enforcement to further see us all as enemy combatants. And it starts in a boardroom. Like, all of this work starts in a boardroom with very rich people who are just see extraction of profit from our bodies in one way or another.
And is Brassfield Gorey, are they based in Atlanta or are they based somewhere else?
Oh, that's a great question. I forgot where they're based out of.
They're based in Marietta, Georgia, which is where the 2022 protest was. But they also have an office in Birmingham, which also happened to be targeted, actually, in solidarity with our arrest that day while we were incarcerated on May 13th, 2022.
And maybe we could talk a little bit about the sort of movement response. You know, I've talked about it some, but I think it's a good thing to have just like a separate convo on is the, how has the movement responded to your legal situation in the last like 4 years? Either, but I think both of you should say something. So whoever wants to go first.
At first it was like this big groundswell of support, which was amazing because both of us dealt with being incarcerated for different amounts of time. And after coming out of that situation, like literally my brain did not work, I don't think, for 2 years. But since then, it's gotten a lot harder to find support because I can't get a job. Both of us have been trying for years at this point. Between the job market and the charges, I don't know what it is, but it's extremely difficult right now. And I don't have health insurance, and I have a leg that separates the knee because I have a loose AC. It's bad. Yeah, the movement has been incredibly helpful. That being said, there are some real holes. There are people who are involved in the RICO who literally don't have a home right now.
Right.
Because of stuff. And they're the most vulnerable. We do have, there has been a fund established to help everyone called the Forest Fund for Free Speech. And I'll give you the link for that to include in the show notes. And hopefully people will contribute to that because it was helping to support. Our lives have been destroyed. Whoever we were or living as before this started, before our arrest and charges started, we are very far away from that now. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I'm like way in a world way out of whatever I thought was possible before. It's really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, I really just want to affirm and emphasize a million exclamation points added to everything you just said. This kind of repression changes people's lives, changes everything about your life and everything about your possibilities and outcomes, probably longevity. I always joke that I have aged rapidly in the past 3 years, but I'm really not joking. Just everything about my mental health and my ability to survive is pretty incapacitated. And I don't even have it the worst. Like a lot of my co-defendants, like Priscilla said, our co-defendants are very vulnerable. Yeah, unhoused and get a job. And the problem is, there's a groundswell of support in the beginning, which is hugely appreciated and just unbelievably important. And these are long-term, forever effects. And we as a movement need to figure out how we're going to support people through the long term, for the long haul. And that's been difficult. Even with the Cobb County 3 case, we were able to mobilize enough support. And we took an offensive strategy and we won, thank God. This isn't over. We still have two of the Cobb County 3 who are now facing federal charges. And then we have the possibility that they'll continue this strategy. Hopefully now they're discouraged by our winning yesterday. But what happens to the RICO defendants? Like, it keeps going. If people care about the RICO defendants, you got to care about the Cobb County 3, now the Cobb County 2. You got to care about what happens to all of us in the aftermath of all of this and organize the appropriate anti-repression infrastructure and culture and really expand what we think about as security culture into actually keeping everyone both safe and supported and held in either taking risks or bearing the brunt of the risks others take in direct action.
It should also be noted, like with this Minneapolis case, is that these were the folks that they indicted were organizers, some out of labor, some out of community groups, some teachers and things like that. The things in which they organized is they organized patrols in their communities and they organized protests at the federal building and things like that. And the government has gone after them for basically organizing people to say no to this huge surge of ICE. And there's something that you mentioned before we started recording that I just want to ask y'all to emphasize, which is we did the show on Prairie Land a month or two ago. We had two shows on Prairie Land in the last 2 months. And there were people who testified against other people, and that solidarity element was not strong within that group of people. And I'm wondering if you could just talk about how that has been important for the RICO 61 and the Cobb County 3 and Stop Cobb City just in general.
Which is interesting because in Prairie Land, I believe they all knew each other prior, and Hannah and I met in jail.
I actually think some people just showed up and they had never met before.
But we were largely a collection of new friends because of this ace. And yet we all had enough solidarity to know, oh, we do not talk to the police for any reason. But we just don't. And also to work collectively, because the only way that we all stay safe together is by working, having our lawyers work together in a collective defense situation. It clearly worked in J20 in the actions at Donald Trump's inauguration in 2020. And
it was 2017,
sorry. But it worked with that, and it will continue to work because what the state is doing is just ridiculous, and the process is the punishment. I don't even think that they intend to win any of this. They just want to put dirt on all of our names, make our lives as hard as possible, and hope we never show up at a protest again. So, which for myself, that's basically happened because I don't want to be a liability to other activists in the street, and I don't want further trouble, period. So now I have a dog and hang out in my neighborhood. Oh, what?
Yeah, I want to just add the same principles of collective defense were important in the Cobb County 3 case. I can speak for myself that I felt very confident in my facts, and I felt that it was important for me to remain in solidarity with my two co-defendants in that case to put my body on the line by filing for a speedy trial, which in Georgia is a very serious demand at the statutory level. It means that it has to be scheduled within 6 weeks. You have to be tried. And if not, the case is automatically acquitted. And so I felt that it was important for me as someone with a strong case, I felt, to get this into court and then fucking pummel them with motions to dismiss and call their bluff, especially on the due process violation.
How many motions to dismiss did y'all file before it happened?
Three.
Yeah, we had three main ones. And what that resulted in was we had the dismissal on the motion to dismiss on due process violation because of the delay, which is basically like calling out. A lot of it was exposing what the corruption that they were already engaged in. And we also challenged them on the fact that they did get a letter from the governor to get permission from the governor for the attorney general to prosecute the case. That was what got the RICO thrown out. The fact that they didn't get the letter from the governor to get the authority. So this time they actually got the letter, and we still challenged it by saying you should have pled that you got the letter in the indictment. They didn't share that at all until we were already in litigation and already in exchanging motions. But that failed. It was denied. Yet at the same time, it exposed that the state actually agrees with us. It would its failure in the RICO. It actually needed to get the letter. And right now, they're appealing the RICO dismissal on the basis of, oh, we didn't need the letter. But you got the letter for this prosecution. You got the letter for all future Cobb City prosecutions for your harebrained little strategy to take one bite of the elephant at a time. by prosecuting us individually now that the RICO has failed. So they're contradicting their own appeal of the RICO. So that was a huge win that accompanied the aggressive strategy that was in solidarity with not only the other two co-defendants, but also with all of the co-defendants who are filing motions to dismiss based on violations of due process right now and are awaiting a decision from a judge, and anybody that they try to do this again to within the RICO or beyond.
It's also, I just want to note that because the case was dismissed, your trial was supposed to be scheduled to begin next week. And
that's
so,
right.
Yeah, I meant to say that towards the beginning. My last question, because I think we're kind of getting towards the end of time here, is like, what can people do to support this sort of continued effort? And there's still outstanding cases going on here, like the federal case, the RICO case.
So you can go to WilaniTheFree.org and sign up for the email list so that you get all future press releases on everyone's cases. And you can also give to the Forest of Free Speech Fund, which is there to help all defendants in these cases, because all of our lives are destroyed by this. And literally hanging on by a thread, it's hard.
Yeah, I would encourage, like I said earlier, people to fundraise for that Forest Speech Defense Fund and build relationships with people you know in your community who have been targeted by the state, and actually find out what it is you can do to support them, and then do it. And then just keep doing it. Don't stop supporting people, because that support is vital.
And also, just like, join the jail support network if that's more available to you, or start one for your local jail. It's so easy. We have a group here in Brooklyn that started a year and a half ago, and they just sit out in front of night court and are there with cigarettes and food and clothes and whatever else people need. Jail support is so easy. And if that is not up your wheelhouse, then go yell at city council about all of these jails and prisons and detention centers that they're trying to build, and say, no, we don't want to do that.
And that's an increasing movement, especially around the ICE detention centers. It's very much like an increasing movement that we're seeing.
Yeah. I mean,
we're also seeing a lot more ICE detention centers being proposed, but it's nice. It's like the data centers, right? So we see a lot of people resisting the data centers, but then we also see
it's not a foregone conclusion. Just because these vampires are trying to put these into our lands and our neighborhoods, and they don't have to be built, you can fight back against it, and you should.
Yeah, don't let the state win by allowing them to intimidate you. That's what they want.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to wrap it there. Priscilla Grimm and Hannah Cass, it's been great talking with you today. I'm glad that all the charges got dropped yesterday, or the Cobb County 3 charges got dropped yesterday. Folks, if you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to this on the audio platforms, give us a rate and review. It helps us with the algorithm. And if you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org and hit the support button, or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. It was great talking with y'all today. Congratulations, Hannah, on their charges getting dismissed. And everyone else out there, make trouble and misbehave.